Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Devil is Here in These Hills, West Virginia's Coal Miners, and Their Battle for Freedom is a work of labor history by James Green that reconstructs the struggles of Southern West Virginia coal miners from the late 19th century through the early 1930s, centered on the mine wars. The book examines how miners confronted a tightly controlled company town system in which coal operators dominated housing, stores, schools, churches, and even local law enforcement. Green shows that these conflicts were not only about wages and working conditions, but also about political power, basic civil liberties, and the right to organize. The narrative brings together major episodes such as the Paint Creek Cabin Creek Strike, the Mettwan Conflict, and the Battle of Blair Mountain, the largest armed labor uprising in American history outside the Civil War. It is both a regional history and a broader study of industrial conflict in the United States. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, how company towns turned coal production into total social control. One of the book's most important contributions is its explanation of how coal operators exercise power far beyond the mine itself. Green presents the company town not simply as an economic arrangement, but as a system of political and social domination. The operators owned the land, controlled the houses, and influenced daily life through company stores, private guards, and employer-aligned local institutions. That structure made ordinary collective action difficult because workers could be excluded from meeting spaces, monitored by armed deputies, and pressured through dependence on company-issued scrip. By reconstructing this environment, the book clarifies why miners saw labor organizing as a fight for freedom rather than a narrow wage dispute. The argument also helps readers understand why the conflict became so violent when the workplace extended into every part of community life. Resistance challenged the entire local order, not just a single employer's decisions. Secondly, the mine wars as a sequence of escalating labor sankharshas, Green does not isolate Blair Mountain as a dramatic anomaly. Instead, he places it within a longer arc of struggles that built toward open conflict. The book traces repeated confrontations across several decades, including the Paint Creek Cabin Creek Strike of 1912, the Mettwan Confrontation in 1920, and the armed march that led to Blair Mountain in 1921. This sequencing matters because it shows how miners learned tactics, built solidarity, and responded to each defeat or partial victory. The violence was cumulative, shaped by failed negotiations, repression by private security forces, and the inability of ordinary legal institutions to protect workers. By connecting these episodes, Green gives the reader a clearer sense of historical momentum. The mine wars were not a single explosion of anger, but a long political struggle that intensified as miners concluded that conventional channels offered little relief. The book therefore functions as both event history and structural analysis. Thirdly, Blair Mountain and the scale of armed labor resistance in the United States. The Battle of Blair Mountain is the book's most dramatic episode, and Green uses it to show the extraordinary scale of labor conflict in the Appalachian coalfields. Thousands of armed miners advanced against a smaller but better equipped force of sheriffs, deputies, and private guards, creating a confrontation that stands among the largest insurrections in United States history. Green's treatment avoids treating the battle as mere spectacle. Instead, he explains why miners were willing to take such risks after years of repression and why state power aligned so closely with coal interests. The battle becomes a test case for the limits of industrial democracy in the early 20th century. It also reveals the relationship between local labor conflict and federal intervention, since the arrival of federal troops helped end the march. By emphasizing the scale and seriousness of Blair Mountain, the book restores a central but often neglected chapter in American labor history, and shows that labor activism could take militarized forms when workers were denied ordinary political remedies. Fourthly, labor rights, collective bargaining, and the meaning of freedom. Although the book is rooted in a specific regional conflict, its deepest theme is the meaning of freedom under industrial capitalism. Green presents miners as people fighting for more than higher wages. They sought payment in money rather than company scrip, safer conditions, union recognition, and the right to bargain collectively. These demands may seem basic now, but the book shows that they had to be fought for against a legal and economic system designed to keep workers dependent. That emphasis gives the narrative moral and political weight without reducing it to simple heroism. Freedom here means the ability to act collectively, speak publicly, and resist coercive labor relations. Green's analysis also shows that legal structures can either entrench inequality or support worker autonomy by focusing on what miners were denied. The book helps readers see the historical roots of rights that later became central to American labor law and public expectations about workplace fairness. Lastly, memory, documentation, and the recovery of forgotten working-class history. A final major dimension of the book is its role in restoring a neglected past to public memory. The mine wars are less familiar than events such as Haymarket or the Homestead Strike, and Green writes against that obscurity by bringing archival research, historical synthesis, and clear narrative into one account. The book matters not only for what it tells about West Virginia, but for how it expands the canon of American labor history. It reminds readers that important historical struggles can disappear from mainstream education even when they shaped broader social rights. Green also underscores the durability of oral history, local memory, and cultural transmission, showing how stories of resistance survive even when institutions fade. That makes the book valuable to historians, students, and general readers alike. It offers a model of how to recover working-class experience from the margins, and why such recovery changes the way Americans understand democracy, conflict, and industrial development. In conclusion, this book should be read by anyone interested in American labor history, Appalachian history, the history of corporate power, or the origins of workers' rights. It is especially useful for readers who want a serious account of how industrial conflict operated in practice, not just in theory. Green combines narrative momentum with historical interpretation, making the book accessible without sacrificing analytical depth. What distinguishes it from many other labor histories is its focus on the full social system of coalfield domination, the company town, the private guards, the legal structures, the union battles, and the armed resistance that followed, rather than treating the mine wars as an isolated regional episode. The book shows how they illuminate broader questions about democracy, coercion, and collective action in the United States. For students and general readers, it offers a clearer understanding of why labor conflict in West Virginia became so intense. For scholars, it provides a carefully framed synthesis of a field that had long been underrepresented in popular historical memory. Its lasting value lies in recovering a forgotten struggle and showing that the fight for workplace rights was also a fight for civic freedom. If you would like to support James Green, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.